Music right there from Refugee, Grand Canyon Suite. Patrick Mraz in studio with us, and boy, it's cool to hear. It's cool to hear the little nuances in that in the remasters. And I want to talk about that real fast. That, like you said, Robin and the guys over at Voiceprint did such an awesome job. And I know you told us a couple years ago. Tell our audience again how this all came together with you getting these redone.
Well, it was actually through the remasters that Bill Bruford came up with. And he had organized the remastering and re-release of Music for Piano and Drums.
Right.
And Flags by the little duo that we had together called Mraz Bruford. And he never kind of told me about it.
But I
found out through some very good friends. And eventually I was kind of prepared that Rob would get in touch with me. And he did.
Yeah.
You know, by my publicist, Brian Kelleher.
Yeah.
And, Mac Maloney.
Yeah. That's who I got to give very a special good friend, thanks to very tonight
good,
as well.
Very good friend who puts us in touch together.
Yeah, yeah.
He's doing a fantastic job of, you know, being my publicist and so on. And we've known him for like 12 years.
He's a good guy.
He's a fantastic guy. He's a writer, you know. Yeah. He writes.
It's funny. And the funny thing is about Mac is that, you know, despite, you know, like everything that he does, when him and I talk, we talk sports. Like we rarely ever talk about music. He's a big Patriots fan. I'm a big Eagles fan. So in the Super Bowl a couple years ago and they went to play each other, him and I were trading barbs back and forth. But I got to thank Mac. I got to thank Phyllis here. Also Carol as well. And of course you, Patrick, for being here with us tonight. It's really been a lot of fun. But like I said, when Voiceprint did this whole thing, I mean, the buzz, you remember back in 2005, the first set were released.
Yes.
Everyone was going berserk. I mean, online, I was one of my most downloaded radio shows when we had you on because of those releases.
So,
you know, right after Refugee, you know, we move a little, you know, further on. You hooked up with the guys in Yes.
Right.
Which, you know, was an interesting time, you know.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Very complicated time as well. Yeah. Extremely busy time because I was also carrying on doing some film scores in Europe and in Switzerland and so on. And I had some more work with the director, all the film directors I had worked with. And with Refugee, we after the tour, I mean, we still had a few gigs to do, but we were hitting some kind of a bit of a wall with the record company, although we had Refugee coming out in the charts, you know.
Yeah.
It was like 28 or 26.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, at the time, big news, Yes, we're looking for somebody.
Yeah.
One day, I even talked to John Anderson on the phone. A friend of mine passed me on the phone and said, "Hey, talk to John." And, you know, "Hey, man," you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I was doing a gig, so I was not ready to talk and so on. But then eventually, their manager called, Brian Lane.
I
was back from Switzerland that very day, having finished a score with the Gérard Depardieu, you know, and Marlène Jobert, you know, and he says, "Do you know who I am?"
"You know who I am. I'm the devil."
He really sounded like that. He's like, and they used to call him that, you know.
Yeah.
Ron Lane, man, was really, really, really a very, very... very, 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 very strange kind of character. Very dark, very kind of,
but
you know.
But he made so many great things happen.
No. I'm not saying it. He was one of the greatest managers in the business. Yeah, of course, yeah.
He
was very kind of manipulative and very, very political about these kind of things. And he was organizing things behind the scenes that we really didn't know about sometimes. Mm-hmm. And he asked me if I wanted to go to, it was not even an audition. He said, "Would you like to come to see a rehearsal of my boys, you know?"
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Yeah, sure. Okay, so I'll pick you up, you know, Wednesday." So he picks me up. He nearly ran over me because I was late for my, he was late, I was late. I was arriving in Earl's Court. Of course, the pavement was very, very wet because it rains all the time in London.
Right, right.
And, runs over, almost. And he said, "Okay, take me in his car." We go to North London, and then there was the whole barn, you know, full of equipment and so on. Yes, you know, an army of roadies, you know, unbelievable, right. You know, and everybody arrived in their Rolls Royce and Bentleys and whatever, you know, mm-hmm. And after tea and a joint, everybody started to go and tune the instruments for a couple of hours, you know, and there was like all these instruments, mm-hmm. Which actually were Vangelis's instruments. Wow. They were all out of tune, so it took me a good 20 to 25 minutes to tune them.
Out of tune.
And they once I tuned them, I took my time, you know, and they said, but let's jam. Then I said, hang on, I've got to tune those instruments because, you know, they've been here probably over the weekend and,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So I did tune that, took my time, and I started to improvise some stuff and some counterpoint and all kinds of stuff and mm-hmm. and play some of my own stuff, you know.
Right.
And also, of course, I threw a few notes here and there of, you know, material that I knew from, yes, you know, like Roundabout and so on, just a few arpeggios and so on. And I think I got the gig then.
Right, yeah.
But I didn't want the gig, that's the thing. Right. I didn't want the gig. I mean, you know, I was so kind of impressed. I was very impressed by their music. I mean, they played me what they had composed of Gates of Delirium already.
Yeah.
Not the whole thing, because they hadn't composed the whole thing, but right. And some parts of Sound Chaser, song part. Yeah. And that blew me away, man. I was in the middle of them four.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I had refused the joint that had been offered to me, because right. otherwise I wouldn't have been together, you know. Impossible. I would have been going straight to Asylum,
right.
you know.
Right, you would have been sound chasing. Kind of you would have been sound chasing, definitely.
Anyway, you know. But that was unbelievable. Yeah. And Chris was doing a demonstration of his basses, you know, Rickenbacker basses. And yeah. Alan was very, very powerful.
He was really tight on that album.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And Steve was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. You know, he had a virtuoso approach, especially for those kind of new songs that they were going to do. Mm-hmm. And of course, John's voice. I knew Yes since the 60s. I had met them in 68 mm-hmm. and 69. Mm-hmm. Especially in 69 in Switzerland, even, you know, during the Golden Rose Festival, mm-hmm. where they appeared, and I had invited them to a party, and they had even listened to my own band, Main Horse, you know.
Right, right.
And, you know, so I knew the guys, I knew Bill Bruford, mm-hmm. but, you know, Alan, I didn't know. So anyway, very nice guy, and mm-hmm. the roadies, and they made me very, very comfortable. And then suddenly out of the blue, I think John or Chris said, how about a little introduction to that song that we're going to call it Sound Chaser? And what do you think? Could you, what would you do there?
Right.
And I said, oh, I would do a. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
He said, oh, man, that's cool. Yes, and then I would go. You know, and then again and again. And I said, oh, yeah, we could do that. Okay, Chris, very, very cool. Chris, he comes to the keyboard. He says, hang on, Patrick, what was that again?
Yeah.
With his little voice.
He's the best.
This giant guy, you know. But he was very slim at the time.
Yeah.
They all were very slim.
Tall, skinny.
We all were very slim.
Well,
skinny, like the unbelievable models. True models. We would be on the Tower Bank show now.
Yeah. Well, I gotta say, actually, this we're gonna play this cut here, which in my opinion was one of the finest moments in Yes history. And this, I want to send this out to some of the listeners I didn't get a chance to say hello to. I gotta send this out to Jeff and Cindy listening to us in Bristol, PA, and also Floyd, who lives in Trenton, is tuned in as well. And I want to send this out to Donna and Cherry Hulsall, Roger and Browns Mills. They want to hear Sound Chaser. So we're going to play this cut here. Once again, Patrick Mraz in studio. And this is one of the most intense pieces of music and one of the most responded to songs on our radio show. So this is Sound Chaser. Patrick Mraz with us. any kind of stimulant when you have Sound Chaser. And I'll tell you a quick funny story, and I got to say hi to him. Greg Orlandini down in Hamilton, New Jersey, who he was a Young Buck DJ back in 1995, and he heard me play that on the radio, and he actually wound up getting into radio. Works for the big Philly news station. I'll just leave it at that. And he called his radio show Sound Chaser because he heard here on this radio station. So, you know, he's listening in tonight. I got to say hi to him. Patrick, incredible. I mean, that was one of the most intense things that I think that you really put. And as I was talking to one of my old engineers. He said, you know, if you have him on, he's like, you know, you got to talk about Sound Chaser. He's like, that's one of the most insane. He goes, after that, I stopped listening to Yes. He's like, you know, he got done after that. But of course, then you moved on to your solo career.
I mean, let me tell you that I had a great time with Yes. You
know?
I
did,
really, really enjoyed that. I was under a lot of pressure recording, Relayer, and especially, you know, of course, the rest of Sound Chaser, To Be Over, The Gates of Delirium, and so on in a few weeks. And I had a couple of, I had a few weekends to learn all the material. So technically, we're talking about seven albums, because we were going to choose what we're going to play about 6 to 8 weeks later, when we were going to go on tour. And we started, I think, in November of 74. Mm-hmm. And, the first time we played that was in Notre Dame or Des Moines, in the middle of America. And I remember there were 17 or 20,000 people, and that was like unbelievable. And I had two or three shows later or whatever, I was more familiar with the thing. And then when we hit Boston and Madison Square Garden in New York, then I was very versed into the whole thing.
Right.
It took me a few gigs, you know, to adapt. But the to start the show with that Stravinsky piece and segue into Sound Chaser was an unbelievable task, but also such a rush, you know. It's like, I don't want to say unbelievable too much, but you know.
Oh, it's a great key catchphrase.
Unbelievable.
Now, you know, but it was a great, you had a really, seriously, a great time in that band. I mean, obviously, you know, your stay wasn't that much longer after that, but you came out with the next album, which to me was.
Yeah. Three big tours. Also the preparation.
Yeah.
Don't forget of going for the one, even if I was not really kind of credited in the album. I still spent two years going over the material, choosing, composing, writing with them, jamming about all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And going for the one came out of that, even if I'm not really on the tapes. And on the special... Yeah. Special thanks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like
politics,
I said,
once again. But you know, don't forget, I really did put a lot of heart and a lot of joy and effort as well. But I mean, you know, creating, putting my creativity at the service of going for the one.
Yeah.
And of Yes. And I think the tours were really, you know, the epitome of all this work and all this tension we had, you know, at the end of, towards the end of 74 to prepare for the first tour. And then, of course, going into 75, you know, the first gig of 75 was the 16th of May in 75 at the Queen's Park Rangers. And it was a very, very cold. I remember, although it was in May, it was cold. There was 25,000 people in the stadium and so on, but it was our first gig since the last tour in the winter of 74. So we were almost rusty and rusty.
Yeah.
And I remember the monitoring mix I had on stage was absolutely horrendous. I mean, I couldn't hear the others. I mean, it was like such an out of balance kind of thing, the whole gig. I don't know how I don't know. I think the engineer was must have been out of it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever, you know. But it's one of those gigs. Anyway, the rest of the tour was very enjoyable when we went to the States, and then of course the 1976 tour with Yes was the bicentennial tour when we played in Philly.
Yeah, you play in Philly.
You know,
right.
At JFK. There was like 100,000,
maybe more.
maybe more.
It was like, it was almost like you're it was almost like you're in Mexico City almost.
They had to shut the airport for 3 hours because the lasers we had were so powerful and so on. Wow. You know, it's fantastic.
Yeah. I remember we talked about that.
I remember very fondly also all this area. Mm-hmm. And this playing at the Spectrum as well, you know, Philly's, so many times. It was fantastic.
Even still to this day, Philly's still a very big
and around,
supportive,
you know,
of,
not only the Northeast, not only in Pennsylvania, but New Jersey, and you know, all this Northeast, you know,
forward-thinking people, forward-thinking people. Yeah, but we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk about the story of I, which to me, of all your great albums, I mean, there's just something touching about this album, and I know there's so many things we want to cover, but. But this, when we come back, we're going to talk about how great the story of I was. And once again, friends, Patrick Mraz in studio. And by the way, you're looking good, man. You're looking good.
I feel great.
This guy's a stud, man. Look at this guy. Fog lines are open 609-894-8900. I'm just kidding. No. we're going to take a quick break and talk about one of the great solo albums. Stay tuned.